Today I'm joined by Hugh Parker, who is the Operations Director for the A1 Steam Locomotive Trust and is working on 60163 Tornado whilst it's doing mainline excursions. Hugh, thanks very much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Tornado is already famous for being the first standard gauge new build loco in the UK since Evening Star. Today we're going to be talking about another sort of famous event in Tornado's life, but could you give us an outline of what Tornado is to anybody who hasn't heard of it before?
It's an A1 Peppercorn Pacific locomotive from the LNER, or the London Northeastern Railway. It was built and completed in 2008. And since then, we've been operating around the UK on mainline tours and visiting preserved lines throughout the UK.
So this was a landmark event. No mainline steam locomotive had been built in the UK since Evening Star.
That's right. Yep. And we were the first. When the project was first started, the doubters said it would never happen. It was not possible to build from scratch a new steam locomotive, and you know, people should be focusing their efforts on restoring the heritage locomotives, many of them, even today, many of them still in a scrap condition. And we were told it couldn't be done. I wasn't involved during the build of Tornado. I came along much later after they had been operating. I was fortunate enough, I'm based normally at the Llangollen Railway in North Wales, one of the very successful Steam, Steel and Stars events, managed to encourage the A1 Trust to bring Tornado. And I was very fortunate to be rostered to drive the locomotive on several days during the event. Met the guys that from the support crew that looked after it, and was invited to go and join them for a run on the main line. And you might say I've never looked back.
Things spiralled from there. They could Indeed. See keenness when they saw it. So in April 2017, Tornado took part in a pretty landmark event for steam traction on British railways, 100 miles an hour. Can you tell us how that idea came around and why?
Yeah, indeed. We're limited normally to 75 miles an hour on the main line. As the main lines around the UK get busier and the available paths for steam charters get fewer, we need to be able to operate at higher speeds in order to be able to fit into those paths. So our long-term plan was always to build a locomotive that could operate up to 90 miles an hour on the main line. The 100 mile an hour came about as a result of the testing and the proving that we had to do to demonstrate that Tornado was fit and safe to operate at that speed. So we had to demonstrate a 10% overspeed, which would have been 99 miles an hour. The planners in Network Rail realised that 99 miles an hour would be just tempting fate, and said, look, you know, we know you will want to, so we will authorise up to 100 miles an hour. And that was the proving test run that we did in April 17.
So do you think that steam traction on the main line might be seen by some as a burden because it can only go 75?
It's certainly, pathing is certainly a challenge, and getting in and amongst peak passenger services on many routes is now becoming impossible. And even some freight traffic is travelling now at much greater speeds, which again just restricts the number of paths to allow steam excursions to operate.
When a date had been set, what were the preparations needed specifically for this speed run? Or did you do several runs beforehand that's kind of led up to that?
No, there were no previous runs, although on the day, or on the night, should I say, in the northbound direction, we built the speed up gradually, and the intention was always to go for the 100 on the way back, which is in the end what we did. But in terms of preparing the locomotive and operating at gradually higher speeds, no, we didn't do that. But we did have to go through a huge amount of paperwork exercise to demonstrate that on paper, all the systems were safe, that we had particular dispensation to operate up to 100 miles an hour for the test run. And we put in place a number of other systems and checks to prepare the locomotive specifically to operate at higher speeds.
Why was the test taking place at night?
At night, there's much less traffic around, so there were more paths available to us. And that was the reason why we did it at night.
There was a BBC documentary made about this speed attempt. And in the documentary, you can see that the coaching stock is quite modern. Was there a reason behind that?
That was simply the stock that was available to make the run. At the time, there was still an issue of or concerns about Mark 1 coaching stock operating behind steam at 100 miles an hour. but that was stock that was put together very kindly to allow us to make that run. It was stock that wasn't necessarily in normal use and therefore didn't need special treatment and was available to us. More importantly, wasn't required the next day for something else.
What was your experience of the night? You were on the footplate.
I was, yeah. I took the engine north from York to Tyne Yard near Newcastle. But prior to that, I'd been with the engine during the day with the preparations, the fitness to run exam that had to be done, making sure that the engine was fully prepared for the run that evening. Well, I joined the footplate at York and we had a schedule of activity to make sure to meet on the way north. So we had to demonstrate that that braking from those speeds was safe. So we conducted a brake test on the way north and we built speed up gradually having left York. And we managed on the northbound run to reach 91 miles an hour. So I managed 91 miles an hour on the footplate of a steam locomotive in the UK, which was quite exciting. On arrival at Tyne Yard, we gave the locomotive a fairly careful inspection to make sure that all was well mechanically. And I spent the time whilst our engineers were going around the outside of the locomotive, oiling and inspecting. I cleaned the fire to make sure that the fire was in the best condition it could be for the return journey when we were going to go for that 100 miles an hour. Having been at Tyne Yard and whilst I was cleaning the fire, the rest of the support crew topped off the tender, refilled the tender with water, and we put some more coal in the tender ready for the return back. Once we were happy, we then handed the locomotive back to our operators, DB Cargo, and the crew joined the footplate to take the engine back south with great anticipation to go for that 100 miles an hour. Before we could do that, we had to travel forward into Newcastle to turn. So we turned the whole train. On the way north, we'd had a diesel on the back, which we left behind at Tyne Yard after we'd turned. I think we had a 67 on the back.
Okay.
And again, that was there to assist with the turning move prior to the locomotive heading south. I handed over to Graham Bunker James, who is our commercial director, and he had the pleasure. He has been involved with Tornado since they finished it, or just before they finished it in 2008, and he had the honour of being on the footplate and bringing the engine southbound and making the attempt at that 100 miles an hour.
And were you in the support coach at that time?
So yeah, we changed roles. Whilst I was on the footplate as the owner's representative supporting the footplate crew, Graham was the responsible officer and running and conducting operations from the support coach. When he stepped up onto the footplate, I took over as the responsible officer for the run south.
Did you feel a bit like you were channeling the spirit of Sir Nigel Gresley's team in the dynamometer car during Mallard's run?
Well, there was certainly a great deal of excitement, and you'll see from Tom Ingalls' documentary about the run south. Of course, whilst the dynamometer car at the time was the way of verifying speed and drawbar horsepower, we had far more sophisticated pieces of equipment, and almost everybody had a GPS on their iPhone or their iPad and was watching the magic figures climbing upwards.
So can you take us step by step through, once you'd left the yard, what happened after that?
So yeah, we knew that we had three attempts to get the engine up to 100 miles an hour. The first attempt was running south in the Darlington area. Unfortunately, we had to reduce our speed when we were routed through the station rather than down the fast lines at Darlington. So that was the first attempt missed, as we had to check speed to go through the platforms in Darlington through the station. Nice as it was to be taking the engine through her hometown station. The second attempt, again, would have been further south, and we ran out of railway with a speed restriction at the end of the section where we thought we could get 100 miles an hour in. So finally, sort of in the Northallerton area, on the run back down towards York, somewhere around Thirsk, was the last attempt to get to that 100 miles an hour. And as you'll see from Tom Ingalls' documentary, the figures very slowly climbed up from 98 miles an hour until we hit that magic 100.
And what was the reaction of the coach at the time?
Well, there were two coaches. We had a coach of invited guests and people with an interest, engineering staff, etc., to witness the event. But we had our own support crew in the support coach. And there was elation from both vehicles when that 100 mile an hour was reached.
Did you even sleep that night?
No, because we ended up getting back to Doncaster and into Roberts Road, which was the depot that we were using, in the less than early hours of the morning. And again, once the engine was back on the depot, there was an amount of disposing, making sure that everything was safe, and fastening the engine and coach down, leaving it ready for its next turn of duty. So, no, it was a case of looking after the engine first. I think I slept on the train on the way back to Bristol.
So this event was not widely publicised. No one really knew when it was going to happen outside of the Tornado's own team. Was that because it was a test train, or was that to avoid people bystanding taking risks, as we've seen with Flying Scotsman?
An element of both. We weren't sure. First of all, we weren't sure exactly where we were going to achieve that 100 miles an hour. So we weren't advertising that we would be doing 100 miles an hour on this particular stretch of railway. There are too many variables involved to be able to forecast that, you know, with any certainty. The date could have changed for a number of reasons at the last minute. The biggest threat perhaps being the locomotive passing the fitness to run exam, which was more stringent and much more thorough than routine exams, because we were going to be putting those extra stresses into the locomotive. So, you know, on the afternoon of the run, had we not passed the fitness to run exam, we wouldn't have made the attempt. So a number of factors at play, not just because it wasn't so much secrecy for the sake of secrecy, and there was no obvious attempt to deceive people and say, well, it's happening or it's not happening. That was just the way that it was.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember there was a significant amount of buzz around it at the time, and everyone was trying to second guess where Tornado might appear next. Does running at this speed place much additional strain on the locomotive?
There's certainly a great deal more of effort involved in getting it up to 100 miles an hour. She was very comfortable, you know, getting up into sort of the early 90s, but that extra, you know, 5 miles an hour from 95 to 100, as the fireman on the evening will tell you, was a significant effort. In terms of, you know, stress on the locomotive itself, I mean, in steam days, they were regularly running at high speeds, and specific engines were selected for high speed runs, and they were, you know, more carefully tuned and given lavished that additional of engineering attention to make sure that they were in the best best condition to run at those higher speeds.
In April 2018, Tornado suffered a failure to the centre motion.
A fairly catastrophic failure to the middle engine, yes.
Yes. Was speed a factor in that?
Well, it was on the first booked 90 mile an hour service, and the incident happened just as we'd reached 90 miles an hour and the engine was settling in. She'd run at 90 for a brief period of time when the crew on the footplate started to feel that something was awry. The initial indications were an unusual vibration, and then that started to transmit into a very significant vibration through the reverser stand on the locomotive. So they realised at that point that something pretty serious was wrong and started to take steps to bring the train to a halt. In the end, it got so severe that they made an emergency brake application and brought the train to a stand. I was the duty responsible officer on that train, and myself and the duty engineer, once it was safe and we'd taken a block on the line next to us to allow us to get down from the support coach and go and inspect the engine, we got down and went forward. David Wright, my duty engineer, crawled underneath the engine into the middle engine and discovered that the combination lever and the union link were completely missing. That was pretty serious. As a result of the incident, there were some fairly careful investigations made. The engine was immediately quarantined. We were recovered from near Sandy. We were recovered by diesel to as far as Peterborough.
I remember it was a Class 66.
It was a 66.
Only run at 75 anyway.
Well, actually, we were running at less than 20 miles an hour because of the concerns of damage to the engine. So we went forward fairly carefully to avoid any further damage. And we took Tornado and the support coach off the train at Peterborough. And our friends at the Nean Valley Railway were very kind and provided us some accommodation for further inspections and investigations into what had gone on.
And there followed a fairly rigorous period of testing.
Absolutely. As initially, the engine was quarantined until it could be formally inspected, which happened the next day. So a team of examiners came down from DB Cargo, our train operator, and made a very careful inspection of the locomotive to ascertain what had happened and what had caused the failure. And beyond that, we conducted some further investigations. We wanted to challenge the quality of the oil to see whether the oil was an issue. And the outcome of the investigations were that a number of factors were at play, which resulted in that failure. Speed, we don't believe, was a factor. There were some issues over some tolerances in the engineering of the middle engine, which had been overhauled that winter. We were concerned about the correct lubrication and the oil supply to the middle engine. And we were also, when we tested the quality of the steam oil that we were using, we were concerned that the results, and in particular the viscosity levels that were reported, were not as they should be. So a number of factors combined, if you like, almost a classic accident, a number of factors which on their own would probably not have caused the failure that occurred. But when they all happened together, it was that perfect storm that caused the failure of the middle engine. In fact, what happened was the leading valve seized in the liner and stopped the valve and the valve crosshead from moving. Meanwhile, the main crosshead was continuing at about 60 miles an hour. The top of the combination lever was held seized solid, and all that could happen was for the combination lever to flex and eventually fail and shear, which is what happened. The combination lever then dropped down until the union link ripped off the crosshead and fell into the forefoot.
Was this a failure that really could have happened to any loco operating on the mainline?
In theory, yes. We, you know, locomotives rely on a proper, decent oil supply to bearings which are in effect white metal bearings in a bronze bearing. And if for any reason the oil supply to a bearing becomes interrupted, or the oil is of the incorrect quality, that can lead to the bearing running hot. When it runs too hot, the white metal that provides the bearing surface melts and runs out, which means the bearing fails. And if that's not detected and the crew don't take steps to bring the engine to a safe speed and eventually a stop, then potentially, yes, that can lead to a catastrophic failure similar to the one that we suffered.
And I think what was quite clear to the public was that everything was handled in a professional way, which is indicative, really, of the way that Tornado is run.
Yeah, I think on the day we were fortunate in that the plan to recover the locomotive went really smoothly. It felt an age waiting for the 66 to come and recover us. In actual fact, I think it was less than 2 hours from us coming to a stand and blocking the East Coast main line to the 66 arriving and then beginning the recovery, albeit at 20 miles an hour, to Peterborough.
Will we be seeing more 90 mile an hour runs from Tornado?
Not in the short term. It remains our intention that we have a locomotive that is capable of operating at higher speeds in order to operate successfully in a modern railway, as I've said earlier, amidst trains operating at higher speeds, which means reduced pathing opportunities. So yes, eventually we would wish to see Tornado operating at 90 miles an hour.
So really this operation and testing phase is future-proofing the locomotive and its operating procedures?
That was always the intent behind why we wanted to operate at 90 miles an hour, yes.
So not so much a reaction to a current problem, but anticipation of one to come?
Well, that's true, although that problem exists now on certain sections of railway where it is very difficult and in some cases impossible to path a steam special around high-speed passenger operations.
As I understand it, the A1 Steam Locomotive Trust has the intention to operate their own train, including the carriages. Is that still going ahead?
So it's still an aspiration. A large cost of operating our own tours is the hire of the rolling stock. And if the opportunity arises and we can do so sensibly, then the opportunity to own all or part of our own train is something which we are considering.
Soon, hopefully, we're going to see another locomotive emerge from Darlington Works, the P2.
Indeed, P2, the Prince of Wales, is well on its way. Recently, we announced that we've placed the order for the boiler for the P2. In fact, we've placed the order for two boilers. And so we will be operating two locomotives with the luxury of having a spare boiler. The intent being that whilst both engines are in traffic, the spare boiler is away, being overhauled, ready to be put back onto the first locomotive that's due a major overhaul. And that'll reduce the downtime. The biggest challenge of an overhaul is getting the boiler out, sending it away or getting it overhauled, bringing it back and putting it onto the locomotive. If we have a spare boiler, then that reduces significantly the amount of time it takes to overhaul the locomotive and get it back into traffic.
It's definitely the Achilles heel of any overhaul.
It's certainly it's the longest pole in the tent in that respect, yes. But it'll certainly be an interesting locomotive to see out and about on the main line. And we look forward to some of the challenges of the Devon Banks or the Scottish Hills and taking it forward. We've been told many times that A1s don't climb hills is a phrase that echoes around the A1 Steam Locomotive Trust frequently. I think recent runs and some of the trains that we've done have proved that not to be the case.
We're soon going to have the chance to see the P2 and the A1 operating alongside each other, which will offer an interesting comparison. The P2 and the A1 never having seen each other in BR days. What do you think will be the best moment for you when the P2 finally gets into steam?
Well, it would be nice to double head with the A1 and the P2 at the head of a train. But I think the potential of operating our own train with the A1 taking the train north to York, handing over the train to the P2, which then takes it on to Edinburgh or beyond, I think that's a really exciting prospect.
Absolutely. Hugh, thanks so much for coming on the show.
There you are. Somebody else is letting us know that they're here.
Thanks, Tornado. Hope to see you again soon.
Corwin, thank you very much.
Massive thanks to Hugh for coming on the podcast and for showing me around Tornado. It was fantastic. If you have any comments, questions or suggestions, why not get in touch? The Facebook page is at RailwayManiaNet, as is our Twitter, and the Instagram is RailwayMania. Alternatively, you can go to RailwayMania.net and there's a contact form on the website. Coming soon, I've got plenty of episodes in the works on various different topics, hoping to release them at fairly regular intervals, so please subscribe. Thanks again for listening in.